Good morning, Green Bay Packers fans. Welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Tirvu. Joined this morning by our live blog director, Jamie Snowden. We're talking some Packers football. To do that, we have our regular Wednesday guest joining us on the phone. We have Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com. Mr. Yonke, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing very well. How about you, Brian?
Very good. Glad you could join us. Let's get right to it. Nathan, with the Packers safeties being much maligned the first game of the season against the San Francisco 49ers, Jerron McMillan and probably to a lesser extent, MD Jennings, but I don't think Jennings had a great game by any means. How did those guys do from week one to week two? Did they improve at all?
Well, we definitely saw an improvement out of both of those players. Basically, anyone who had a bad game week one had a better performance week two. But Jerron McMillan, he only missed one tackle instead of four this week. And then he allowed just two catches for 17 yards. It still wasn't a great performance, mostly thanks to that one missed tackle, but it wasn't nearly as bad as it was in week one. And then MD Jennings also had a better game. He allowed one catch on third down that was short of a first down, so even though he allowed a catch, it was a good thing because it was a third down step. And then he also allowed the late touchdown to Santana Moss, which was a play. The ball was thrown while only Moss could get it. It wasn't the greatest play in coverage, but you couldn't ask for a ton more. So definitely a better game out of both of the safeties there.
We'll take baby steps. That's all right. It was a step in the right direction, but sticking in the secondary, we got to look at Tremont Williams playing the slot cornerback position. I mean, this is a guy who's spent a lot of time in the league and has rarely played the slot before. What did you think of seeing Tremont Williams in kind of a new area of the field?
Yeah, it was definitely interesting. He was there for about half the game from what we saw. Half the game was at left cornerback, and then the other half was various places in the slot. With that, he only allowed two catches during the game, so it was largely invisible. His performance in general, not too good or not too bad in there. But I could see it possibly being, I would definitely think he's doing it because of some of the injuries the Packers have had in the secondary. And I could also see it being maybe to prepare for some of the upcoming opponents if these injuries continue. I could see the Packers wanting to put Tremont Williams up against A.J. Green against the Bengals, regardless of where Green goes. So they could want Williams to have more performance or more time in the slot so he's ready for that. And then also after the bye weeks, the Detroit Lions. So some of the players aren't back then. They have Calvin Johnson to worry about, and I could see them wanting Tremont Williams on Calvin Johnson for the entire game that time.
You know, that's a very interesting thought because they've talked a lot this training camp about keeping cornerbacks to their side of the field, and while they could do that with a guy like Sam Shields, you know, basically moving Tremont from perimeter to slot, that's a way to keep him on perhaps, you know, some of the opponent's better receivers. So that's really an interesting thought. But let's turn our attention to the offense here now. There was a lot of attention, I think, this past Sunday on the Packers receivers. They had a great day with their yards after the catch. You know, where does this performance rank among the best games that PFF Pro Football Focus has charted in terms of yards after the catch?
Sure. We have data going back to the 2008 season, so the past six seasons now. And this game had the most yards after the catch for any team in any of those games. While that's a short answer, it's also interesting to note that in third place was the Falcons this past week against the Rams, and in fifth place was the Broncos in week one. So we've been seeing a lot this year games where there's a huge amount of yards after the catch. And then also something that I found interesting was a lot of the games where there's a lot of yards after the catch, it's due to one or two big plays that were short passes and the receiver ran a long time after the catch, where this game it was really a whole lot of plays where there was a decent amount of yards after the catch on each of those plays. So it was a lot more spread out, which was very interesting to see as well.
Very interesting. Number one all time, albeit we are only going back to 2008, but still, for as many games as PFF has charted, I think that's rather unique. Aaron Rodgers was his usual dominant self against Washington. But Nathan, what I want to know is that a credit to Rodgers himself, or is that a credit to his receivers that he played so well?
I think that's a credit to everyone on the offense.
Okay.
When things are going bad, it's really easy to put the blame on someone because you can see, okay, it's the offensive line not pass blocking well, or it's the quarterback throwing inaccurate passes, or the receivers dropping balls. But on offense, when things are going well, it's really a credit to everyone for things going well because the offensive line did do a good job. They only allowed pressure on 8 of the 46 dropbacks, which is a really good rate. Rodgers, as always, is accurate on his passes. He was the third most accurate quarterback this week. And then there was only one drop amongst all of the receivers on all of the passes that they did. So really it was everyone that did well. If you want to put credit on just one person, I would say it's Aaron Rodgers because he was the one distributing the ball and he was the one doing well on every play, where the receivers only had to do well on the plays they were targeted. But it was really a credit to everyone on the offense.
We're talking to Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central. And you said that, you know, it's a credit to everybody on the offense. And one more player on the offense who did well this past Sunday is running back James Starks. And, you know, he gets the ground game going. He helps take some pressure off Aaron Rodgers, helps him there. James Starks had his first 100-yard game since 2010, the Packers' first 100-yard rushing game. Is the James Starks of the Super Bowl run in 2010 back, Nathan?
The game that we saw out of Starks in Week 2 definitely looked like one of those games. He had five players miss tackles on him, which he did three times in 2011, and that's the most he's had in his career, so five missed tackles in four games over his career. I think a lot of it had to do with the Redskins' defense. In both their Week 1 and Week 2 performance, they were missing tackles left and right on anyone who had the ball. And then Starks also had a lot of help from his offensive line. We graded out all five offensive linemen as positive in the run-blocking category, as well as John Kuhn. So he got a lot of help as well. So I'm not sure if we'll continue to see this great play out of Starks, but it was definitely a good game in Week 2.
Well, speaking of the offensive line, if you ask me, guards Josh Sitton and TJ Lang seem to improve from Week 1 to Week 2. They really had a tough game against San Francisco 49ers, and, you know, albeit that being a very good defensive team, but how would you say the pair of guards played for the Packers and in their performance from Week 1 to Week 2?
Yeah, I would say it was night and day for both players. Both had terrible games Week 1, and they both had great games Week 2. They allowed a combined 7 pressures in Week 1, and in Week 2, they didn't allow a single pressure. As I said before, the entire offensive line did well in run blocking, and those two in particular graded out as the highest, best two run blockers on the team. And then each week on our website, we have a PFF Team of the Week, where we take a look at the best players at each position over the past week. And TJ Lang was one of our starting guards, and Josh Sitton was an honorable mention. So considering how bad they played last week, this week was great improvement.
Just curious, did any other Packers make that list besides TJ Lang?
Not off the top of my head, but it wouldn't surprise me whatsoever with the entire offense looking good and most of the defense, especially the run defense, looking good.
Well, the Packers take on another opponent this upcoming weekend. They visit the Cincinnati Bengals. You alluded to A.J. Green before, but tell me a little bit more about the Bengals here in depth, Nathan.
I would be worried about the Bengals. If the Packers were to only lose one more game throughout the season, I would guess that this Bengals game might be it. I would be really worried about their defensive line. Geno Atkins is the best defensive tackle in the league, at defensive end, they have Carlos Dunlap and Michael Johnson, who are both really good, both run defenders and pass rushers. So I could see them getting a lot of pressure on Aaron Rodgers and making his life really difficult throughout the game. Also on defense, they have Leon Hall, who will probably be playing across from Randall Cobb for the majority of the game. So he's going to make Cobb's job more difficult. So really for the Packers offense to have success, they have to get the ball up quickly. And then I would guess whoever's lining up at left wide receiver will be across from Adam Jones most of the game. If anyone on the offense has a lot of success, it will be that wide receiver. Then in terms of the Bengals offense, they have a really good offensive line, so I don't see the Packers getting much pressure on Dalton. And then from there, it'll be they really need to stop Green, and I could see it being a low-scoring game if the Packers' defense can be successful. But I could see their offense struggling a lot in that game.
Do you think this is the toughest game remaining on the entire Packers schedule?
I think so. I think the Bengals are one of the best teams left on the schedule, and I think matchup-wise, the Bengals' strengths are matching up really poorly for the Packers with the Packers' weaknesses.
That is a very interesting statement you made there, Mr. Yonke, but we appreciate your analysis. I hope you're wrong. I hope it's an easy game for the Packers, but no doubt about it. I realize this is a good team. So anyway, we thank you so much for joining us here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central. We appreciate your analysis, and we'll take a look back at this game next week.
Okay, sounds good. Have a good one.
All right, take care. Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com joining us here at Railbird Central at CheeseheadTV.com. Glad to have him joining us and glad to have the listener joining us as well. The show today directed by our live blog director, Jamie Snowden. That was a very interesting statement. I mean, a lot of people have said the Packers, you know, schedule this year is rather tough. You know, they have a lot of tough road games, especially the road games especially look daunting, and this being among them, playing at the Cincinnati Bengals. You got road games later in the year at the New York Giants, at the Dallas Cowboys, of course all the games within the division, the NFC North, the Bears, the Lions, the Vikings. Can never take any of those games for granted, especially facing, you know, the Lions in Detroit on Thanksgiving, things like that. The motivation, of course, that the Vikings will have with Greg Jennings over there now, even though the Vikings are off to an 0-2 start, you know they'll be motivated for the Packers game. So a lot of tough games remain on the schedule. Kind of interesting that we hear at least one person say this is the toughest remaining game on the Packers schedule. Can we say it's all downhill from here after week three? It's too early in the season to say it's all downhill from here, isn't it? Well, the Packers still have tough games remaining. It's just that this may be the toughest. It's a game that goes a little bit under the radar, I think, because, you know, first of all, there was so much attention on week one. And the San Francisco 49ers, so much attention. I mean, the whole offseason geared to the regular season opener. And then you have the home opener and the attention that's placed on RG3. I think that game gets a lot of attention. So I think it kind of wanes a little bit, but this is really a tough game against a team that, you know, made the playoffs the past two seasons, led by Andy Dalton, a very good quarterback, a very underrated quarterback, in my opinion. One of the best wide receivers in the game with A.J. Green. One of the best defensive players in the entire NFL in Geno Atkins. That guy's an all-pro. Really, Geno Atkins, potential NFL defensive player of the year. I mean, we got a lot of season left to figure out who's going to win that award, but he is that good. He is that good. He's a big dude and a mean dude. So he's going to be a tough guy for the Packers to handle. Hopefully the interior of the Packers line will be ready for him. TJ Lang and Josh Sitton may be on the upswing here, and they'll be up to the task along with Evan Dietrich Smith of containing Geno Atkins. So toughest game remaining on the schedule. Wow. That's something. So anyway, with the rest of today's episode, I wanted to get into the Packers secondary a little bit, and we started to talk to Nathan Yonke about the Packers secondary, both the safeties and the cornerbacks, because I thought there was, a lot of interesting facets to this pass game, the week two win against the Redskins. Pardon me, against that team in Washington. I always slip and say that. Anyway, I thought especially interesting was Tremont Williams playing the slot cornerback position, just because it was so new. So, he's been in the league for how many years? Like 7 years, 8 years. And this is really, I mean, not to say he's never played slot before, but I mean, it's never been something where he's been the primary slot guy for the Packers. Charles Woodson has been that guy for how long, prior to this season and last season with Casey Hayward. So, I mean, to see Tremont Williams play there is really different. It's just not a place he plays very much. And part of the reason he's playing there, part of the reason is because they're getting some snaps for Devon House on the perimeter, on the outside. You saw Devon House come into the game this past week kind of unexpectedly. In week one, Devon House rarely played. I don't know. Did Devon House maybe play when they were trying to defend late in the game, or against, didn't the 49ers have a chance at the end zone there at halftime, a Hail Mary, and I don't know if Devon House came into the game or whatever to play that, but regardless, he didn't play very much week one. So I wasn't expecting Devon House to play much in week two, and all of a sudden they kind of brought him almost on a rotational basis, not something they do a lot with defensive backs. Now teams rotate defensive linemen quite a bit. They have linemen have certain roles. They seem to shuttle in and out of the game quite a bit more than defensive backs. It's not like anybody was injured in the secondary during Sunday's game. It's not like anybody was playing so bad that they had to be benched. But they bring Devon House in, and then they kind of slide Tremont Williams over to the, nickel slot position that pushed Micah Hyde out of the game, at least temporarily. Micah Hyde played as well. But yeah, so you've got Devon House out on the perimeter, and I think the Packers really like his height out there. Devon House is 6'1", whereas Tremont Williams is 5'11". So House has 2 inches on him. I think they like House out there on the perimeter, and how he matches up with taller wide receivers. Obviously, those 2 inches kind of give him a little bit more of advantage over Tremont Williams. Certainly, height isn't the only factor you're looking for. Speed is certainly one. Instincts is another. Jumping ability, leaping ability. I mean, there's, a lot goes into it, but still, I mean, that's Italian Devon House's column, that he's able to match up a little bit better from a height perspective. And so I think they wanted to see that. So I think you're going to see perhaps at times against the Bengals, and moving forward, perhaps, but I mean, our attention basically here this week on the Bengals, I think you're going to see Devon House and Sam Shields on the outside, and then Tremont Williams on the inside a few times. And yeah, I mean, that's going to give Tremont Williams an opportunity to line up across from AJ Green, perhaps more than he would normally, because, AJ Green, they're probably going to move him around the offense from the slot to the perimeter to you name it. They're going to put him in motion. They're going to try to get him open quite a bit. You can see that happening. But, getting Tremont Williams a little bit of experience in the slot is going to perhaps pay dividends. And you know, I can't really look into the crystal ball too much because I don't know. I think the Packers are really focused on this week because then, of course, after week three, week four is the bye. They get that extra week to, you know, recover, recuperate. And I think you're kind of looking after that, you know, Morgan Burnett coming back at safety, Casey Hayward coming back as well. So these guys are getting healthy. I don't know, you know, going forward, how much we're going to see Tremont Williams playing the slot when Casey Hayward's back. I mean, you got to assume he's going to take that spot over, assuming he's healthy. And I mean, obviously that's the key word, healthy there. I mean, if Casey Hayward isn't, you know, up to speed yet, obviously a healthy Tremont Williams is going to be better than an unhealthy Casey Hayward. But assuming Casey Hayward, you know, gets back up to speed, is healthy, I think the slot cornerback position is his. But you know, that doesn't appear they'll have his services in week three. So Packers really trying to gear up for the Cincinnati Bengals, knowing this is going to be one heck of a tough game. And the Packers can lay it all out, you know, because they got that bye coming next. I'm sure they are going to be really ultra motivated for this game. You know, this really is a big, big game, and they can, you know, go all out and play their hearts out because they got a whole week to recover after that for the bye, coming early in the season. But still, you know, this has been a tough early game schedule for the Packers, facing three consecutive teams from the playoffs a year ago in San Francisco, Washington, and now Cincinnati. And yeah, and then at safety as well, kind of sticking with the secondary discussion here. Chris Banjo saw his first extended regular season action this past Sunday against Washington. And, you know, I think he played, if I remember, I looked it up, he played like four snaps against San Francisco. So, yeah, he played. But this was his first extended action that he got this past Sunday a little bit. So, you know, I think people wanted to see more of Chris Banjo this past week, and they finally did get to see him a little bit more. And that also, I thought, played to Jerron McMillan's strength. He kind of played the dime cornerback position a little bit against Washington. And like I said on Monday, I think that plays to Jerron McMillan's strengths. He's better when he's near the line of scrimmage. He's not quite as good when he's back at the deep safety position, although he's still got to be, you know, he still has to get comfortable back there. But you know, you're seeing Chris Banjo being part of this new look secondary that we're kind of seeing all over the place. It's definitely different. I mean, you know, you kind of thought going into the season, you're kind of looking at Morgan Burnett, Sam Shields, Tremont Williams, and as your starters, and now you're seeing all these new faces like Chris Banjo in there and Devon House in there, and you know, guys playing different positions and you know, moving around. So it really, the secondary really is interesting how the Packers are going about this, how they're moving them like chess pieces a little bit. And you know, that's the great part about football. It is a chess game a little bit, you know, offense versus defense, X's and O's, trying to who's going to get the advantage. And you know, it's going to be interesting to see how the Bengals are going to try to line up AJ Green to take advantage of his strengths, and how the Packers are going to counteract that. You know, what are they going to do? Are they going to line Tremont Williams up on him, you know, no matter where he goes or things like that? I don't know. It's tough to say. So, but interesting nonetheless, regardless. So anyway, you know, it's big game coming up here. Packers going on the road, two out of the first three games on the road this season, and then the bye. So not getting a whole lot of early season action at Lambeau Field, of course, with everything being equal, though. I mean, They still have 8 home games, 8 road games. They'll eventually be having more games at Lambeau. They're just going to come later in the season. So, yeah, it's Packers on the road and really a tough schedule, a different schedule this year with the early bye, with the early road games, and all these tough road games we've been looking at. But yeah, I just thought it was so interesting that it didn't even really cross my mind with so many difficult road games that the Packers have this year, that this could be the toughest remaining road game on the entire Packers schedule this season. That's something else. That's it hadn't even crossed my mind, but I can see it. I can see it. This Bengals team is good. Did you watch them on Monday Night Football taking care of the Pittsburgh Steelers? I mean, certainly the Pittsburgh Steelers have their issues, have their problems. But still, Cincinnati, a team on the upswing, definitely under Marvin Lewis there, playing well the past couple years and maintaining that level of success too, seeming that they could be a force in the AFC. I mean, this is a potential Super Bowl team. Again, a lot of time left in the season to figure that out, whether how good they are compared to other teams in the AFC. Particularly the Broncos, who I think are pretty good there, but still a good team, and the Packers will have a test this weekend, this Sunday in Cincinnati. So, yeah, definitely one to look forward to, and one we'll continue to look forward to all week long. So, today, Wednesday, the Packers get back to work today. This will be their first day of practice this week. And this is the day we get the update on Eddie Lacy. If you'll remember, Mike McCarthy gave his usual day after game press conference on Monday, had nothing to say about Eddie Lacy, and basically says, "We'll give you an update on Wednesday." Well, now it's Wednesday, so we're kind of waiting to see how things go there. And especially when you combine the Eddie Lacy concussion with the hamstring injury fullback John Kuhn has, that's a little bit interesting there too. I mean, the Packers need really one of those guys. I mean, ideally they have both of them healthy, but if they don't, if they were happen to be out of this game with neither Kuhn nor Lacy, that would be a little bit scary. You know, the Packers, they would be quite thin in the offensive backfield if both those guys are hurt. So we'll see. I mean, I can't imagine Eddie Lacy playing this week. I mean, guys have come back from concussions in a week before. That's not unheard of. So I couldn't really tell you. Maybe it was kind of a less severe case. I mean, I don't know. We're going to find out more today, hopefully. Mike McCarthy will clue us in a little bit during his press conference, which, by the way, is slated to be at approximately 1:10 p.m. Central Time. It's always streamed on Wednesdays at the Packers official website at packers.com, so you can tune in and watch for yourself. But yeah, I mean, we're sitting here waiting to find out that what's up with these guys. You know, simply, you hope for the best for them, and you hope that the Packers are having no depth issues in the offensive backfield, because if Kuhn and Lacy were gone, you're looking at only Starks and Franklin as the only true running backs in the Packers backfield. And Jonathan Franklin, he's never even taken an NFL snap before at running back. I don't think he even had a snap, has he? I know he hasn't had a carry yet. So I mean, you're talking about, one guy who you feel okay with Starks, especially because, the game he had this past week, but he's experienced in general. But beyond that, Jonathan Franklin, really inexperienced. And Randall Cobb has played running back on occasion. He can continue to do that for a few snaps here and there, but he's not a full-time running back. So, yeah, definitely something to keep an eye on this past week. So, or this upcoming week, because just because of the health situation here. And same goes in the secondary with Morgan Burnett and Casey Hayward. Those two guys didn't play in the first two games. If I were to guess, the Packers will continue to err on the side of caution in the secondary as well. Keeping those guys out until after the bye week, but who knows? Who knows? They could be back this week. We'll find out later today. That's what's to look forward to on a Wednesday here. But that'll do it for today's episode of Railbird Central. We're now past 9 o'clock a.m. Central Time. Make sure to come back. We have shows every Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 8:30 a.m. Central Time. So make sure to join us again. Join us again on Friday morning. But on behalf of Jamie Snowden, I'm Brian Kirvu. We'll see you later, everyone. I'll leave you today with a song called The Place That I Call Home by the infamous String Dusters on Psi Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.